Hello, everyone. Welcome. Nice to see so many in here. So how many, it's like a little hand raising exercise. How many were here for my last session about half an hour ago? I didn't manage to scare everyone away, at least. Guess that's a good thing. OK, so this talk is way different from what I just did. This has got nothing to do with Solid. This is all about AngularJS. And actually, it's not about AngularJS, but I'll get back to that. It's about the internals of Angular. So just before we get started, how many of you guys have worked with Angular today? That's pretty much. OK, so if we turn it on. How many of you have never seen Angular before? You guys are going to have an interesting time. It kind of assumes a bit of knowledge about it, but still, if you get this in the back of your head of how it works, when you start working with Angular, this will just make sense. If you haven't worked with it before, there might be some things that won't make sense straight up. OK, so most of you have already seen this. Who am I? My name is Chris Klug. I'm a software geek, code monkey, whatever you want to call it, at a company in Sweden called Active Solution, where we do custom software development. And I also used to be, OK, so this is going to get, I'm going to get the pity vote now. So just remember this when you vote for the session. I used to be a Silverlight MVP. Yeah. So. There are a few people going, yes, and there's a whole bunch going, oh, that's embarrassing. And there are a couple of going, sorry about that. Yeah, it is what it is. I used to do a lot of XAML, and I got into Angular a year ago about, or a year and a half ago, and have built a pretty massive scaling Angular application where the goal is to have 500,000 users running it. So we've got, I've got some information about Angular, and I thought, cool, TechKit is on the way. So what do you do? Well, how about I submit a proposal on how Angular's internal works, right? This is TechEd. It's Microsoft. And Angular is a that's not the Microsoft technology. Yeah, so I sent it in anyway. I thought, hey, what's the worst thing that can happen? It's like, oops. So I get this response back saying, you've been accepted. We want you to come and talk about Angular. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty sweet. Because the talk that I'm doing today and the topic that I want to talk about is something that had made a massive difference to the way that I built things ever since I saw how it works. I got this introduction from the web and figured out how it works. And all of a sudden, I went, this is something that everyone working with Angular should understand because it makes a difference in how you think about things. But I get this back, and I go, OK, I'm going to actually do this. I'm actually going to build this presentation. Sweet. So I go to GitHub, and I get my AngularJS Git repository, download it to my machine. It's like, sweet. I'm just going to take the AngularJS scope class, or the scope JS file. I'm just going to go through that one and figure out how to explain everything that's going on in there. And I'm just going to write in the code. I'm just going to show you the JS file and explain what's going on in there step by step so you know what's going on in there. And then you get this. So there's one single reaction to that, because that was my plan for this whole talk. I've got an hour and 15 minutes. And this is what I get. You go, it's like, there's no other way to react to that whole thing. Everything just goes out the window. So I had to start over. The funny thing is I started over, and I talked to a guy called Shay Friedman, who does a lot of Angular training as well. And he had that reaction, but not according to what I would be doing. He said, all your attendees are going to do that. Everyone in here, he said, hope you've got strong cleaning materials to remove all the brain parts from when their heads explode. So just we'll keep the level there. You know exactly where we're going. It's like we've got Kramer freaking out. We've got brains exploding and things. That's a good start. So I thought, I can't do that. I cannot take the code from Angular and actually just show you. It's not going to work. If it says insanity level warning in there, there's just, it's not going to work. So how about I take Angular and I put it on a diet? I don't really need all of Angular, right? I only need a little bit. I only need the scope object. Because all of the magic is done inside one single, what do you call it in JavaScript? Constructor, function, prototype, class, whatever. One unit, one module, right? I need the scope module. That's all I need. So I'm just going to put Angular on a diet. I'm going to take Angular. I'm going to remove everything I don't need. You know what happens when you put Angular on a diet? It actually breaks down. It starts cracking. Because everything, even though it's actually pretty nice architecture and it's all dependency injection and everything like that, it still ends up being a bunch of dependencies for other things that I don't really want to show you guys. I don't want to take the scope object and show you that and then have to explain to you how 19 other services work, because that's not my talk. That's not what I want to show you. So that's not really going to work. I couldn't really go with putting Angular on the diet. It's just the way it is. So I decided to build something that shows off the guts of Angular, what's inside of Angular, how it works conceptually, but without Angular. So I'm now going to announce a completely new JavaScript library for the rest of the world. It's like, if you don't like Angular, you can pick up my new framework. It's called Crooked.js. It's going to be the new business. Not at all. So Crooked.js is just what I call it. It's Angular without the insanity level code. So it's a scaled down version. And I'm talking about scaled down from I'm going to go to the moon down to I might take a trip to the woods. Okay? There's barely anything left. Crooked.js is not is all about understanding the essence of Angular's data binding stuff, how it works on the inside, what's happening there. When you get started with Angular, you get this thing. There's a loop. There's a digest loop. Everyone talks about the digest loop. It's the magic sauce that somebody sprinkled on top of Angular to make it work. And the first thing I hear when somebody says, there is a loop inside of Angular that keeps track of all the changes on any object you want to track, I go, that sounds expensive. That sounds like while true. And inside of it, it has a method call that goes, check all objects ever. That is not going to be good. So I just want to go with the innards without the complexities to show you how that works. And it is not, I promise you, not an alternative to Angular whatsoever. The code for my demo today will be available. I should give you a URL at the end so you can download it and have a look at it. But do not put it into production. Do not say that it's the new business, and do not blame me if there's anything wrong with it, because there might be. So when I started doing this, I decided I need some form of development setup. So I'm going to show the reason I want to talk about this is I'm going to pull up a little window that's going to do a bunch of stuff on the side. So I'm using Node to do stuff. You know, whenever you do JavaScript, Node has to be there, even though it's not. I'm not going to do anything on the server, but it's JavaScript, so I just need to get Node in there somehow. It just has to be there. So I'm using Node and a little extra project called Testem. Testem is a test runner that runs Jasmine 2 tests. So I'm actually, for those of you who were in the room half an hour ago, I said I wasn't a test-driven developer. I am going to do this whole presentation test-driven, okay? There was somebody in Sweden that said, the day that I switched from C-sharp and XAML to HTML and JavaScript, he knew that the world was on a slippery slope down to hell. But he said, the day that you preach TDD, that's the day that hell freezes over. You're there, my friends. I'm going to do this TDD. So it's going to be TDD. And I'm running Node to do the tests for me, just to verify that everything works. In the code that you can download afterwards, there will be some other stuff. There will be a gulp thing that runs it for you to do linting as JS hint that checks your JavaScript and things like that. But there will be a bit of Node running in the background here. Another little disclaimer before we start going. Crooked.js take a reliance on jQuery. So they're still I'm going to do some DOM manipulation inside of my... I'm going to create two directives at the end. They will use jQuery. And I'm taking reliance on underscore.js for some manipulation of stuff inside of my Crooked.js framework. Angular doesn't. So if you see me doing underscore dot and use underscore JS or I use jQuery stuff, that's not inside Angular. I just want to make that clear. But I didn't feel like rewriting a whole DOM manipulating JavaScript library. It just felt like quite unnecessary stuff. So basically, let's do code, right? Nobody likes slides anyway, and I just did pretty much an hour and 15 minutes of just slides. So let's code. There's a test. This is my first test. The scope object is responsible for all data binding stuff, right? So it's the thing that we tack things onto that will be the glue between our functionality and the view and our directives. So the scope object is the only thing that's interesting to build. So the first test I've got is it can be constructed and used as an object. So basically, a scope is nothing but a JavaScript object. There's nothing magical in there at all. So the first test is just that. And the implementation is magical. It's full of unicorns and things like that. Actually, it's not, but I'm going to stuff unicorns and rainbows into it later on. This thing now, just to, as I said, I'm going to run a little thing on the side. So I'm going to go out here and pull up my command prompt. Then I'm going to go test them. And I'm going to get this little test runner here where we can see whether or not my tests actually succeed. So you can see that the code that I'm writing is actually working, that I'm not just chunking stuff in and then at the end of the session go, so that's it. I'm not going to run it because we all know it works and then walk out. You will see that it works. So there it is. The first thing to do is obviously we need another test, right? That can't be it for the scope object. So we're just going to go in here and put in a new test here. One of the biggest things inside the scope is that we can add what's called a watch or watcher. You can put it in to your scope object and say, I want to watch this thing. And whenever the magical Angular unicorn says that something has changed, I want to make sure that my thing has changed or not. So we need a dollar watch method or function that will be called to evaluate whatever I want to have a look at. So the implementation of this is actually fairly simple. It's like there's a this dot, and then you have a little $$ watchers. It is just an array of objects. That's it. Nothing fancy at all. But the actual function that we've got here is put on the prototype of my scope. It has one single thing it needs to do. It takes two parameters, a watcher function, which is basically responsible for figuring out what I'm watching. What's the thing I want to listen to changes for? And it takes another function that's basically when I'm done, if something has changed, I want to run this thing. I want to make this change. In AngularJS, you're actually allowed to pass in a string here instead of a function. And then Angular will convert that string into an evaluating function for you on the fly. That's one of those things I didn't want to show you because it's another 4,000 lines of code to put in there. So we're just going to stay with the function. And you can use functions in AngularJS as well. You don't necessarily need to say $watch and then pass a string in here. You can pass a function and you can make changes or look at things programmatically instead of passing in a string. So I go push. Add my watcher to the list of watchers and my listener. And that is basically all I need to do. Let's verify. Very much so. I can add a watcher. The problem now is that the watcher doesn't actually do a whole lot, right? So we have to go a bit further. So let's have a look at the next one, which was really supposed to be that's a good place to have it. So $digest is a little bit different. $digest is another method that's on the scope object, and that's where you get the digest loop from. And the digest method basically has one thing to do. It goes through each one of the watchers I've put into this list and runs that first function. Tells it basically, hey, have your value changed? And it goes through all those functions to figure out if the value has changed. So my test in here basically just says, inside my watch function, I set the values to hello world here, and then I verify that they have been run. Right now, nothing runs because there's no digest method. So let's put a digest method in here, or function. It's another simple prototype on the function for the scope object. And it basically it stores the this variable. Anyone that's ever touched JavaScript knows that this is a very weird thing in JavaScript. It's not the most obvious thing. So let's keep a record of it. And then whenever it's called, I'm basically just going to do a for each loop over all of my watchers and call the watcher object. So I put in a little object here with a watcher and a listener. I'm going to call the watcher object's function and say, do your evaluation. Evaluate if something has changed. I'm loving this. I'm going to do TDD the rest of my life. It's just everything is green. I'm also never, ever going to do code that I don't have snippets for. I'm going to tell my company that we only take projects like that. So we've got a digest method that now runs through each of the watches, which is not really all we need. We need more stuff, right? So let's go in here and add another test. We're at 3. Another thing, all of the watch methods that are functions that we put in there actually needs to have access to the scope variable. Because that way we can evaluate whether or not something on the scope has changed, which is what we normally do. We make changes to the scope objects from our views. We change text boxes and things like that, and then we evaluate that. So we need to have access to the scope object inside of our watchers. That's a fairly simple thing to do. That's it. Tests, for test complete. Not all of you are going to see that, but it says for test complete. So our watchers now get access to the scope object. They can evaluate changes on the scope object and figure out whether or not they've changed. That's about as far as we've got. Next step. Runs a watcher's corresponding listener when the watcher returns a changed value. Here is where it gets interesting. So basically, our digest method will go through each one of our watchers, calling the first function, the watcher function, passing in itself. And if that function returns a different value than it had from the beginning, it will basically run that other function. So you have one function that evaluates whether or not the value has changed, and then one function that does the change or does whatever you want to do whenever the value has changed. So for that, we're going to go in here in our registration of our watchers and add in a last. I'm just going to set that to null for now, because the last value has been null. And then I'm going to go in here and I'm going to make a little change here. Sorry about the snippets, but it's faster than me typing, especially with podium that's about knee height for me. It's kind of hard to type on. So what it does, it goes through each of the watchers, but it starts out by looking at the last value of the watcher that's registered, and then it calls the watcher method, passing itself, to get a response back. What's the new value that I'm watching? If they are not the same, it basically means that the value has changed, obviously. I go and I pull out the listener method and I execute that, and then I save the value as the last value. And then if I run the loop several times over and over and over again, as long as they're watching the same value, the new value will be equal to the old value, so I won't be executing that extra listener function every time I run this loop. Fairly simple so far. 5 tests at work. So what else do we need inside here? We need another test. So let's go in and put in test number 5, right? Runs a watcher's corresponding listener at least once. So here's the funky thing inside that I didn't really know. In Angular, your listener will, on the first run, when the whole thing initializes, will actually run once. I knew it in the back of my head. So basically, if you have code that's really complicated inside of a listener function that listens to changes or want to react when there are changes, if you don't want to run that the first time that the application boots up, you should always, inside of your listener, make sure that the value has actually changed. So what we need to make that work is we need to add a few more things, right? First of all, we're going to have a little thing here, and this is weird, okay? That would happen right now, right? Am I right? The code would run that right now. But, so the important thing, I missed that, is null is not a good last value. Why is null not a good last value? Because if my function, my watcher function, returns null, it won't actually run the listener. I am not guaranteed that the listener will run once at the startup of the application, which is what Angular guarantees. So I need a way for Angular to figure out that this is the first time it's run, and whatever value you return from your watcher function, I don't care. I want you to run the listener function anyway. So null is not a good value here. We need something else. And luckily, we can create something that looks like this. Watcher initval. I'm just going to create a function here. I'm never, ever going to use this function at all. But I'm going to use that thing instead of null here. And I'm going to say watcher initval, like that. The reason for this is a bit wonky, but it's basically, I want to make sure that the value, the last value, is a always unique value that there is no way in the world that my watcher function can return. And null is not good, because I can always return null, and I can always return undefined, and I can return a bunch of different things, but I cannot return this function, because I won't know about it. It's a new function. And the cool thing with JavaScript is that that will just make it work, because I've got a value that's I can compare it against, because a function is always going to be equal to the same function again. So I can go in here and change. Actually, sorry, I don't need to change anything. It just worked, because my watcher initval is fine. It's just going to go in. So even if I were to return null out of my watcher function, like this, it will still just get null and figure out that null is not the same thing as that function that I defined, so it's always going to run that one time. You could have done this in a million different ways, keeping track of has this thing run before and set a value and everything. This is just means that we don't have to rewrite a bunch of things. We don't need to do special cases for it. It will just always run once. Is that an important thing, that it always runs once? Not really. It's rare, to me at least, that we have something inside of our listeners that needs to be run at the start of the application, because it's normally set up in a way, at least when we build it, that it just works. But having the knowledge of the fact that it will always run means that you can actually do setup and prepare your stuff inside of your listeners as well and verify that things are the way they should be, depending on where you get the scope objects from. Next test. It's another one that's just, it kind of makes sense. Listeners, basically the things that gets called when a value has changed, need to have access to the new value, because we want to know that, hey, this is the new value. It needs to have access to the old value to make comparisons and figure out, oh, it's changed from this to that, we might want to do this, and things like that. And it needs to have access to the scope. The reason that we need to have access to the scope is the same thing as the fact that our watcher function needs to have access to the scope as well. It's the fact that our listeners often make changes to the scope object, so we need to get that injected as well. So the test here just sets up a new scope, calls a watcher, returns a value, and then as you can see here, we can now define new value, old value, and scope, and use those values inside of our listener to make the changes that we need whenever something changes. In my case, I'm just storing the values and then just verifying that the values work. So in here, we're going to say that one. We're going to make this little thing here instead. So we're going to change the call to the listener to take the new value, but there's also a little interesting thing here that you should really keep in mind, is that if the old value equals that function that I defined at the top, you know, the watcher function that I said that was really unique up here, that's the last value, if the old value and that value is the same, it means that it's the first time this thing runs, and that's when I pass in the old value as the new value. Or sorry, so you get new value, and then if you got old value equals what your init val, you'll pass in the new value again. Sorry, so it's going to be two new values. So if you ever write a listener that you don't want to run every single time the application starts up, but basically just run it when something really changes, you can always make a little check to see if the new value and the old value are the same, then you don't need to run the rest of the stuff. So a lot of our listener functions will actually just start with a single if new value equals old value return, because we don't want to do unnecessary work. And one of the things, or a couple of the things that I've removed that you won't see in this demo is optimization stuff. Because all of the stuff that we're doing here is things that actually might run very, very often. It could run every time the user does anything, it pretty much will run. And then it could be started by other things as well. So you do want to make sure that everything is as lean as possible and you don't do unnecessary work, because it will just slow your application down. Next step. So here's another one that seems pretty obvious when you get it up here, but it's actually not. It keeps digesting when a watched value is changed in the digest. So if I set up two watch functions here, they both return scope.myValue, but my second listener actually changes the myValue property on the scope, it means that I do want it to run one more time. That's why the digest stuff, as I said, is a loop. It wants to keep running as long as one of these things makes a change. So this thing will result in, the first one will run, it will increase the row count. The second one will run, it will change the my value thing. Then it should go back up and start over again and ask the first one once more, hey, by the way, were you interested in that my value thingy? If you were, that has changed. You might want to run one more time. So we will actually keep it going and keep running the loop as long as somebody changes the scope, or potentially changes the scope. So the way to do that is we take this whole thing here, for each statement we've got here, and we change that into a function. So it wasn't quite obvious what I did, but basically I took my for each loop here, and I pulled it into a doDigest function. And this doDigest function has a dirty flag. And whenever I call my watcher down here, and basically, or my listener, and the value has changed, I'm going to say is dirty equals true. And then at the end here, I return is dirty. So what this function does is very simple. It goes through each one of the watchers. If any of the watchers returns a changed value, I will call the listener and I will say that, hey, this run was dirty, you need to do something about it. And then up here, there, I'm going to add a digest loop. So it basically has a do while, which is one of those cool loops that I rarely get to use, so I'm kind of happy when I get to. It comes in, sorry, that's not at all where I want to put it. That's not going to be a very good place to do it, so let's do it out here. Thanks for the help, everyone. So if you see me doing stupid things like that, you're more than welcome to tell me before I try running this sample. Just gonna verify for fun, the tests not work. So that's why you have tests, right? You do stupid things and it tells you. So it goes in, you call digest. The digest loop will then run, do a do while. A do while is great because it will definitely run do digest once. So it would go through each one of the watchers, asking the watch function, hey, have you changed? It comes back and says, here's the value that I had, and this is it compares it to the old value, and they go, you've changed. Okay, so I'm going to call your listener, and the listener gets to do whatever change it wants, and we set it to is dirty. Then it runs the next one, and the next one, and the next one, but it basically keeps running. First of all, it runs one time, and then if that first run of all the watchers returns that, hey, one of my watchers actually returned dirty, I know that one of those listeners might potentially have changed my scope object, so I need to run them one more time just to make sure that there wasn't someone else depending on the value that my listener potentially changed. Did you have a question? Don't need it.
Once it's true, why would you want to keep going?
So it's got a, it's dirty down here? No. So I still want to have it go all the way through. So even if one runs, I will keep running through that loop, and then I will restart it. There will be another optimization in there. So what Miguel asked was whether or not I want a break in here. So after the first listener that makes a change, I might want to stop. That's a good optimization, but there's another optimization that will fix that. So otherwise, it would be kind of a good idea to actually restart the whole thing and try basically go, I'll go watcher one, I'll go watcher two. Oh, you changed. I'm going to go up, and I'm going to start going like that. The logic here is I'll keep going through every one of the watchers in my list, and if any of them have changed, I will just run it one more time.
What does Angular do?
Angular does this. So there's a pretty big issue with this code at the moment. First of all, it's inefficient, so I'll put in some more efficiency in there. There's a limitation, a change that makes it a bit more efficient. And the second one is actually my next test. So, does anyone want to question me? It's like, that is going to so come back and bite me in about 10 minutes. I'm sorry. I just felt good to saying it now. It's like when it does fail, it does work. But there is a problem in here. Because if I add my next test, throws if digest loops keep going for more than 10 times. Here's a dangerous little thing in here. Because I'm now doing it with just one watch, which makes it stupid. But if I were to do it with two watches, it's actually fairly easy to fail on this. But I watch the scope.myValue property, right? That's fairly good. Not a problem. Whenever that changes, I run my listener, and I try running it once more. But what happens if I happen to do this? So inside my listener, I change the value of the thing that I'm watching to something new that's unique in every time I run it. So I can tell you exactly what happens if you do that. And so can Testem. Because Testem all of a sudden says, hey, I'm trying to find a runner that will run my test. Yeah, but that guy is stuck in an eternal loop that will keep going forever, and he will never come back. Pretty much like me on the stage. I'll keep going forever until somebody yells at the back and says I have to stop. So this is a bad practice, and there are issues with this code, obviously. It's fairly easy to fix. And Angular has this fix in place already, obviously. It's not something that you think about, but there is a maximum time of runs it will run your code. And if you go over that, it will basically stop and throw an exception. And that, in Angular, is configurable. So inside here, I'm going to put up a var ttl equals 10. So time to live is 10. I'm going to allow it to run 10 times. If it runs more than 10 times, I'm going to throw an exception so that I do not end up with that. Because ending up with that in a test is fine. Ending up like that in an application on your website is not good, because it's just going to kill your web browser. So after I put that time to live thing in here, we need to put a piece of code that actually verifies it. So in here, I'm going to take my TTL, I'm going to decrease it by 1. If my last digest run was dirty, and I want to run it one more time, but the TTL is 0. I love JavaScript. I love the falsy stuff. You just push stuff in there and it just magically returns false or true or whatever it feels like. If that goes down to 0, I'm going to throw a 10 digest iterations reached. that will secure us from making little mistakes like, oops, I happened to set up an eternal loop. The crappy part about this is that testem is actually stuck. I'm just going to restart that to make sure that I've got it in the background. Testem, like that. So that works as well. So we have the ability to run our stuff. We have the ability to listen to things. We have the ability to execute our listeners. We make sure it doesn't run more than 10 times. But we have, I love the fact that Miguel asked this question because it sort of leads me into the next step. This is fairly inefficient. The downside of having a change notification working like this in a loop that changes, looks at the value and then evaluates the change, is that we're going to have a gazillion little watchers in there. Every single, pretty much, directive that you use in Angular, every little thing that you hook up, every little data-ng-bind you put in there puts up a little watcher. So every time you have a ng-bind, or every time you have a curly brace, value, curly brace, you're basically telling Angular, I want to have a watcher on this thing. It sets up a new watcher. So we might end up with a list of watchers that might be hundreds or maybe even thousands of watchers running. So you want to make sure that it runs this as few times as humanly possible. One solution would be, like Miguel said, to actually say, if it's dirty, let's just break there and not run the rest of our watchers and then start over again. I actually like that idea. But it's not what Angular does internally, which is why I'm not going to do it. What Angular does internally is that on its watcher object here, it actually says this dot dollar dollar last dirty watch equals null, like that. So this is funky. I love JavaScript in a lot of places. Like, if it's dollar dollar in Angular, you are not supposed to touch it. It's like the private of JavaScript. It's like, if I just put that at the front, you all guys know that don't touch it. It's my personal one. You can go in and make changes to things that are prefixed with dollar dollar as well, but it's not recommended because it is for Angular internal use. So one thing we want to do is we want to make sure that whenever somebody adds a new watch, we want to reset that. So we're going in here and say this dot, actually when it, copy that row, like that. And we want to make sure that we do it whenever we, I want to set that to scratch it so that whenever I start my digest loop, I reset it so that there's no previous dirty loop lying around, or previous dirty watch from what I did before from my previous run. And then at the end here, I'm going to go through this a bit more in detail when I've got the last piece of code in here. We want to go in here, and whenever we run our listener, something has changed, we want to make sure that we set self. We want to make sure that we set that thing to watcher. So we basically, we're just keeping track of the last watch that we ran that reported itself as being dirty. Basically saying, this thing was the last thing I run. This is the last guy that had anything execute. Then down here, we're going to say, if watcher equals, if it's not dirty, and the watcher equals the last dirty watch to run, we're going to just stop. Anyone out there has the balls to show up a hand and say, I don't really get how that works? Because that's what I did when I saw that code. It's like, what? So, okay, let's look at what the test is doing. It's basically, forgot to put my test in. So that's why I don't do test-driven development. I want my test 9. There it is. So what is going to happen here? I'm setting up 3 different watches, and they listen to an array of values. values number one, the first value, second value, and third value. And it doesn't actually do anything. But what I want to do is I want to keep track of how many times the watchers have actually run. How many watchers have I run? So the first time I run this, I expect it to be 6. Why? Well, it first runs one time as a default, and then it returns a new value. So it's going to run one more time because the value would have changed. It will run the loop twice. And then I change the value of the first one to be 1 instead of 0. Then I call digest again. So the second time I run it, it's going to go in and it's going to check the first watcher, figure out that's changed. Okay. I'm going to run the listener for that one. It's going to go to the second one. It's going to go, not changed. Not going to run the listener. Going to go to the third one. It's going to figure out, not changed. Not going to run the listener. But that first one did run the listener. So it's dirty, right? I need to run the loop once more. So it goes around, starts doing the loop again. Comes back to the first watcher. The first watcher now comes back and says, no, the value has not changed. I'm fine. Then my code will have, or decode, the scope code, will have a look if that watcher was the last one to report dirty. It is impossible for it to have affected anything else. So basically, if it doesn't run again, it won't make any changes to the scope object that might potentially cause any other watchers to have to run. So there's no reason for me to run the second and the third because nothing has happened. So I can, because the fact that that was the last one to run and it has now said, I'm done, we don't need to run the last two ones because they can never have been affected. Anyone that still feels that that doesn't make sense? Break is so much simpler, yes. It does, however, change the order of how things are run. So there's nobody who's going to be honest enough to say that they don't get this. Because I'm going to say I'm not going to get this because I really didn't to begin with. It took a while to figure out and why it makes sense. But it does make sense because when you do have 400 watches there, it causes you do not want to run 399 of them unnecessarily. So we have a question? Good point. I actually never thought about it, but yes. So the question was, do you want to put your most sensitive watch first? So basically one that is most likely to report a change, is that supposed to be first in the loop? And it actually makes sense, because if you put that first in the loop, if that is more likely to cause it, say that it has changed, you want to have it as early as possible in the list of watchers because you want to break out of that loop as fast as you possibly can. Yes. The problem is that you don't really have much control over all of the stuff that you're doing in your directives and everything like that. So you're allowed to make that optimization on a teensy-weensy little bit that you're allowed to touch. So I don't think it's going to make a big difference if you make that optimization. So where are we? We need more stuff, right? There's still something missing here, and there definitely is. There's one thing that it's funny. It needs to be in there, but it's not something that I use a whole lot. Does value equality comparison if requested? So this is interesting because I am just comparing whatever comes out of my watch function to whatever came out of the watch function the last time, which is not going to work. Because if I'm, in some cases, because if I'm watching an object, like I'm doing in this case, I'm watching the whole scope.value, which in this case is actually an object literal with several values in it. If I run this now and I change the inner thing in here, actually I don't actually do much, but if I change this value here, so actually I do, I return this and say this is what I want to watch. And then I change the value to inside of my object literal, and then I run it again. It's going to fail. Because what's going to happen is, I'm going to run the watcher. It's going to return the object literal with the hello world properties inside of it. And it's going to say, OK, that's changed. So sweet. And then I run digest one, or I change the value and I run digest once more. What I'm going to be returning is a reference to that object, right? So even if I've changed the values inside of my object literal, I haven't changed the actual object. So it won't detect any changes. The only way to detect changes is if the scope.value is changed as a whole, not properties on that object. So what we didn't want to do is we want to make sure that it's possible for us to pass in one final little parameter at the end here, little true value. And that true value basically says, I don't want you to do reference comparison when it comes to objects. I want you to do value comparison. I want you to go deeper than just, is that the same object? I want you to look at the properties on the object and make sure that it has not changed in that sense. So to implement that, we're going to do a few little things. First of all, our watch function, which is up here, needs to take in a value equality parameter like that. We need to store that in a value equality parameter. In a value equality parameter like that, to keep track of whether or not I want to have it compared by value or by reference. And then, due to the fact that this funky JavaScript thing doesn't actually have real static typing and verifying that that's a bool and everything, I'm going to do that, which is my absolute favorite syntax when it comes to JavaScript. Let's do a double negative comparison thingy in front of it, and that just turns into be true. Okay. Ignore that, it works. Nothing to say here. JavaScript is a screwed up language, and that's just what you need to do. Inside of my digest loop, I'm going to create a new function. Oh, that's not where I want to go. I want to go there, and I want to go r equal. So I'm creating this function here. It's basically a helper function that takes the new value, the old value, and whether or not to do value equality. If I do value equality, I want to use underscores is equal method. That thing will actually go in and compare every single property, property by property, to make sure that they are equal. It's not really hard to figure out that that's a pretty expensive operation, because I have a simple object literal with two little values on it. But this thing could actually have much more complicated properties and much more things to compare. So we don't want to do value equality comparison if we don't need to. We just want to do that if we really, really want to. If we don't want to do value equality, it verifies the new value to the old value. And if that doesn't return, if that's false, it then also goes in and checks if the type of the new value is number and the type of the old value is number. Basically, I've got two numbers. And both of them are none, not a number. Then it should return true. Because NaN, not a number, in JavaScript is obviously not equal to each other, right? So NaN is not equal to NaN, for obvious reasons. If anyone can explain it, that more than welcome afterwards, but that's the way it works now. So we need this special case in here. So what we're going to do in here, instead of this simple line of code here, where we just do this simple thing, we're going to go in and we're going to change that for something like that. So we're just going to go, if not r equal, pass in the new value, old value, and value equality, and that will work. There's one little bug still in this code, because this is fine, works so far, except it's nice that it highlights everything for me, but basically, setting the last value to the new value in a reference case is not going to work, right? So what we're going to have to do in here is we have to clone it. We have to make sure that we get a cloned value of this, which nicely enough underscore has, so we can just do like that. And it will clone the object literal and keep those values. Otherwise, if I just kept the reference to the other object literal and changed it, they would never, ever change. So one interesting question might be, what does Angular do instead of use underscore? They actually have all of that clone functionality and things like that that I'm using underscore for built into the Angular framework. I just, once again, did not feel like reinventing the wheel when it wasn't that wheel that I wanted to show you. So we're pretty much there. The last thing we have one more test to do, which is not actually going to be there at all. We need one more thing to get this going. We need an apply method. So I've got this apply method, and the definition of it working is executes defined function and starts digest. Okay, so apply is a magical function. It is the one that does all of the magical rainbows and unicorns and things. Because if you ever want to pull in some external JavaScript library that doesn't know about Angular, like jQuery, for example, or anything else, you have to use apply to basically get things going. So what this thing does, apply, you call that, and you pass in a function. The scope will then make sure to run that function for you, passing in the scope object so you can make changes to it. And once it's done, it will start a digest loop. So what you're pretty much saying in apply is, dude, Mr. Angular, can I please go and do this thing? And once I'm done, can you make sure just to make a digest loop for me to make sure that if I've changed any objects that all of my watchers get notified? So whenever you do things with, for example, jQuery, you make things with jQuery, and then you do that inside of an apply call. It means that you can go in, you can get values with jQuery and modify the scope object and a bunch of things like that. But then at the end, you say, so I might have changed the scope object. Can you please run the digest loop for me? It will make sense in a little while. So the last thing I need is that implementation. It looks like that. It's really, really complicated. It's a function that takes a function and executes the function passing in itself. And then inside of a try-catch, in the finally, it basically says this.digest to run the digest loop. So is there anyone out there that don't clearly see how all of this just magically is going to turn into Angular's JavaScript binding syntax thing and just work? A couple of honest... What? Clearly. Well, that's definitely a good point. Clearly to me would be, could you go up and do it? No. So, yes? No. It is pretty cool. The thing is that this is actually what we've got. That is the scope object. That is all we need. That is the magic sauce, the unicorns, the rainbows, is everything in there. Except for some functionality that I ignored. But the thing is, the stuff that I've ignored is not important for the binding. So there are things inside of the scope object that has that insanity level warning. And there are other things. For example, there's a pre-digest loop. So you can plug in functionality that needs to execute before the digest loop. You can plug in things that runs after the digest loop in a post-digest loop. You can run apply async to get the apply stuff being run at the end of your digest thingamajig and then put it. Edge cases that you don't need to understand how the binding works, that's the stuff that I've taken out. So the other thing that I removed, the insanity level warning, just to explain what that does, it figures out. So one other thing I've removed is that scopes can actually inherit from each other. So you can have inherited scopes in multiple levels throughout the application. What I've done is I've removed that. Because I think that is what the insanity level warning is all about, figuring out what scope to run and what to run and in what cases and things like that. So, but what I've got is actually fully functional data binding stuff. So all you need. So to recap that, we've got the watch function, and that's where we pass in a watcher to figure out what do I want to listen to. I pass in a function that says when that value that I'm listening to has changed, I want to run some functionality. This is the functionality I want to run. And we've also got the digest method, which basically says I want to run all my watchers and see if anything has changed. And I've got the apply method, which is I want to make a change, and then I want to make sure that you run the digest afterwards to make sure that any changes that I've done is picked up by Angular. So the unit test says it works. I haven't actually shown you that, but it's all green up here, I promise. I just checked. It's actually green. But does it really work? Not. There wasn't a whole lot of people out here, I think, that in the audience that would say that they want to go up and write the rest of my demo and actually show how the database mining stuff works. But does it work? I could leave it here and say my test works and that's done, and I could leave. But I found that that was a little bit boring. So I decided I'm going to show you and actually build something that uses this scope object to get it done. But that's where Angular gets in the way again. I can't use this scope object on its own. It kind of depends on a loader and an injector and a compile thingamajig. So the loader is responsible for setting up Angular and get Angular going, and basically set up the Angular object and then anything on it and a couple of default modules. The module loading. The injector is responsible for making sure that you can get services and things inside of Angular, so we need that as well. And the compile one is actually the most interesting one. The compile one is responsible for taking an HTML node. It goes through every single element in that node and its children, and every single attribute. So it goes, I've got a node here, I've got a div tag, I've got attributes, I'm going to go through each one of the attributes. When I'm done with that, I'm going to go through each of the children and each one of their attributes. So it basically crawls through the entire HTML DOM, and for every attribute and every element, and to be perfectly honest, every CSS class, it looks to see if there is a Angular directive registered with that name. So I need that to basically get Angular going. All of that is something you really don't have to care about because it's just there when you pull in Angular. Unfortunately, as my demo is about building Angular, I can't really just pull in Angular and use it because you're not going to believe me. So what I've done is I've created some pre-built stuff when it comes to that. So I'm just going to pull that in, and you can just ignore that for now. And if you want to have a look at it later on, you're more than welcome to. I don't think I can drag and drop this, can I? Nope. Add existing items, pre-baked stuff, that and those three. So I'm just—it's just JavaScript files. I really don't like the whole idea of saying I'm just going to pull some pre-baked stuff in, but this doesn't really have to do with data mining. It's just bootstrapping Angular. So I'm going to have one more thing. We need to build our own module, right? So we need to have a JavaScript file with a module. So I'm going to call it, magically enough, my module. Like that. And inside of it, I'm going to create this little thing called my module, like that. So that's what we're used to, right? So all of you that have seen Angular before, we just go angular.module, I register my module. That's all I need. Once we've got that, we need a place to show it. So I need an HTML file to show off the binding. So we're going to add a new HTML file. Add new item, HTML page. Let's call it test.html, like that. So I'm going to pull in some JavaScript in here. So I'm just going to pull in like a whole heap of JavaScript and say that just works. So it's just, as I said, load jQuery, things that I need. Scope object that you've seen me build, because it's actually literally the file that you've seen just emerge in front of your eyes. Loader and injector and compile, as I said, are internal things inside of Angular that I've recreated in a simple version. They will just work. And I've put my module in here. So what you guys aren't really seeing when you use Angular is something like this. So what this thing is, it's called setup module loader, passing in window. And what that does, it basically, on the window object, it creates that Angular object. And it sets up module loading and a few little things like that. Then it goes in and it says angular.module and registers a new module that's the ng module. So we all know, hopefully, or we should know, that the ng stuff is just, we always get that. That module is always loaded into Angular, and that's where the Angular team puts all of their services and things like that. So that's just any other module. There's no difference in that module whatsoever. So I add one of those, and then I add two providers, a root scope provider, which will provide me with a scope, and a compile provider, which will provide me with the compile service. And then I use that onload thing from jQuery to figure out when the page is loaded. I create an injector, which is the one that can take care of dependency injection and things like that, and modules and things. I get a compiler, and I get the scope object. Then I pull out my body tag of my page, and I tell the compiler, here, compile. I send in that the body, and the compiler will return a list of directives that are defined inside of my body tag. And then for each one of those directives, I basically just call their directive.link function. In Angular, you have other ways of doing it, but this is a simplified version of the Angular Bootstrap. They just set up the Angular object, they create a bunch of services and provide those through the ng module, and they go through whatever element you have set your ng-app on. So most people put the ng-app on the HTML element, and it just goes through the whole thing. And it executes all of those directives in there. There's one little problem here. I don't actually have a root scope provider. I have a scope object. So we have to create some form of provider that can give me a scope object, and that is fairly easy to do. One only does this. There it is. That's all you ever have to do. Just pull out your little snippet and just surround it with whatever you need, and you're done. What it does, it basically creates a new function called the root scope provider, which has a get method that returns a function, which in turn, when executed, returns a new scope. OK, so the whole services providers thingy in Angular, don't get me started. It's interesting. But that basically provides us with a scope object that we can use. And we can now kill our tests, because since I don't have a scope object available anymore, it's now inside of a provider. And that's another thing. You can't actually get access to creating your own scope through Angular. It's actually embedded inside of the root scope provider. But then you can go scope.new. But anyhow, that's now up and running. We now have a fully loaded Angular application, or Crooked.js, or whatever you want to call it, with a scope object that you have seen me build, which you still don't really get how it works, right? So inside my module, I'm going to add a directive. Directives are the glue that just make everything work. So I'm going to have an increase click count directive. So my directive here is called increase click count. It returns an object which has a link function, which basically this is the way that we're tying the HTML together with the scope object. So what it does inside of that is basically it hooks up and says, this is the HTML node that I put this element, this directive on, and this is the scope object that I'm currently working with. And then I say node.click. So I'm going to hook up a click function to that node, that button that I'm going to be using. Whenever that someone clicks it, I'm going to take my scope object. I'm going to call the apply method. And inside of the apply method, I'm going to do scope.clickCount equals scope.clickCount or equals, so basically setting it to 1 or increasing it by 1. So it goes 1, 2, 3, 4. And then I'm also going to put it into console, because it's always great to have console to log. Just remember to never use console without checking that it exists first, because IE doesn't have it by default. So what's actually happening here is my button, whenever somebody clicks that button or whatever element I have put this directive on, that will go into this click handler, which will go into the apply method of the scope, run this code and say, I want to update the scope and change these properties on my scope. And then, as I am inside an apply function, once I'm done with that, I'm going to tell my scope to run all my watchers. So they can then watch on the scope.clickCount and get notified that, hey, this directive now changed the scope.clickCount. Are you interested in that? Yes, I'm interested in that. I'm going to make this when that happens. So if we go and just put in something that uses that thing in the HTML, This is the syntax you're used to, right? There's nothing different in here. There's a button. It has a data dash increase dash click dash count. Click me. If I were to run this, and I pull up my trusty little console, and I click this, you'll see that it does run. So what does that have with data binding to do? Well, OK, I'm missing one part of this, right? Because it's the fact that I can react to things clicking is one thing, but the fact that I want to show it somewhere is a different thing. So I need another directive that does the showing of the information. So let's go in here and put in a display click count. So that's another directive that I'm creating in here. It's called display click count. Works a little bit different. It doesn't really care about listening to clicks or anything on my node. All it cares about is I want to watch the scope.clickCount that we've got in here. So basically, when this thing is linked, I'm going to say I want to tell the scope, I want to put in a watch, and I want to watch scope.clickCount. Whenever the scope.clickCount changes, I'm going to tell my node that I want to set the HTML to clicked scope click count times. Go back in here. Create a div, put that directive on it. Go back out here, press F5 to reload it. Click this thing, and all of a sudden, it's hard to see, but I want to make this really big so that everyone can see that I'm not lying. It actually works. So it does. It does react to the click. It does put the click count inside of my scope object. I have another directive that can listen to that scope object and update the node whenever the scope object has changed values. Yes, my directives are very tightly coupled to naming what to bind to in the scope, and they can't do child scopes and things like that, but you still got it. So just one last walkthrough to figure out what's happening. So I've got a scope. The scope is being put on my body, or basically there's just one in this case, but it's going to be for the whole page. It goes through the DOM and figures out that there is an increased click count directive. When it finds one of those, it goes to that thing and says, OK, so I figure out that you are available on this page. So here is the node, and here is the scope. Do whatever you want. It hooks up the click count on the node and modifies the scope when something is changed. It goes on, and it figures out that there's another one called display click count, tells that to bind. That thing says, OK, so it's Mr. Scope object. I want to listen to this value here. And whenever that changes, I want to update the view. I click. It changes the scope value, runs the digest. The digest will run all the watchers, and that will change tell the watcher inside of my display click count directive that something it should verify any changes. And if it finds any changes, it updates the HTML inside of the div. So to be perfectly honest, that is a fully working Angular data binding implementation, because that is, without all of the fuss around it with inherited child scopes and pre and post digest loops and all of the complicated, really complicated stuff in there, that is the way that Angular actually does the data binding. It's nothing magical whatsoever. There's not an eternal loop that runs forever. It's just little pieces of code saying, I want to watch this value, and whenever that happens, I want to do this. And then whenever I've made any changes, I'm going to tell the system that I've made a change, and it's going to ask the rest of the system if they are interested in that change. All of the code that you have seen is available at this address, if you want to have a look at it. It will not run the tests. So if you were to download and put in Node on your machine and install TestDem globally or Gulp, and you'd install PhantomJS and everything that you need to get that running, it would fail if you tried to run the test, because I did change the scope to be a scope provider. So you cannot actually run the test properly, but you can actually anyhow go in and look at the code and get a rerun of all the stuff that I just said and try to make changes to it. Maybe you can optimize it. I don't know. Miguel might have found a break that might just fix all of the potential issues that Angular has ever had, except for Angular 2.0. One little thing, I want to give some props to a guy called Tero Parvainen, I think. This is a guy online that wrote a fantastic blog post that inspired me to do this talk that goes through pretty much exactly what I've shown you, but with some more of the complicated stuff. He has also actually produced an e-book that you can get. I think it's $40 or something like that. And it shows you how to build your own Angular. It actually builds all, the goal is to build all of the important components in Angular step by step so that you can follow along, test driven and everything, and see how every single piece of Angular works internally. It's not done, but the parts that are done are good, and I definitely recommend the book if you're interested in the internals of Angular. So that's pretty much all I had to say. I just want to thank you all for listening. I hope you got something out of it. I didn't see any heads explode or implode, and I don't actually need to clean up, which is good. There's some resources here that if you want to go to. You've already seen this slide like 100 times from other sessions. You can go here to get more information. I guess the important part is that one. Please do an eval if you like the session. If not, then, yeah, well, it's up to you if you want to or not. I still have a few minutes for questions, if there are any questions, or if you just want to leave and never see me again, that's okay as well. Otherwise, I'll be here for questions, and I'll also be, I think there's something, oh, it's the country stuff tonight, but if you see me walking around and you have any questions, just jump me and ask whatever questions you have regarding Angular or solid principles. So thank you, everyone.